You're with us for a caller-only hour on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We are recalling some recent conversations with Wisconsin mayors and gathering your ideas for future programs that shine a light on local issues that deserve more discussion. So what program do you have in mind that would showcase your local government? Join in 800-642-1234. But first, Milwaukee residents will have a chance to participate in a historic mayoral election on April 5th. There is no incumbent on the ballot for the first time since 2004. Bob Donovan, a self-described conservative who served for years as a common council member, is facing acting Mayor Cavalier Johnson. If Johnson wins, he'll be the city's first elected black mayor. Corrine Hess has more.
Johnson and Donovan were the top vote-getters in a seven-way February primary. Johnson came out on top with nearly 42% of the vote. Donovan got 22%. Only about a quarter of registered voters went to the polls in February, and now, in the weeks leading up to the general election, enthusiasm for the race hasn't seemed to increase. At the Blue Kangaroo Laundromat on Milwaukee's south side, most of the customers are unaware there is a mayor's race going on. For those who did know, many like Celio Palacio say the outcome doesn't matter much.
And I always like to read the platform of each one of the candidates. And most of the times, it just doesn't work.
Blue Kangaroo is in Bob Donovan's district, but Cavalier Johnson got 44% here, compared to Donovan's 39%. John Johnson is a research fellow at Marquette University Law School who has watched the race closely. He says despite the serious challenges the city is facing, he isn't expecting a high turnout on April 5th. The mayoral election will be the only thing on the April ballot in most parts of Milwaukee.
Turnout goes up quite a lot in the general election for mayor, but that also coincides with the presidential preference vote and often contested statewide elections for Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Donovan has made crime his number one priority in the race. He's calling for more police officers and tougher penalties for criminals.
We have individuals in Milwaukee who behave badly, who behave in criminal ways that are getting away with it because they feel there are no consequences for their actions.
Cavalier Johnson wants to bring back about 200 police officers that were cut in previous city budgets. Both candidates' call for more cops hasn't resonated with everyone. For the first time since its inception, political advocacy group Black Leaders Organizing Communities isn't endorsing a candidate. The group's political director, Kyle Johnson, says neither contender is good for black people.
We know after 2020, after however many past years, we know cops in the black community, the way the current system is set up, it's not working.
Cavalier Johnson says he understands where the group is coming from, but residents want police protection. Still, he says police are only part of the solution to the city's public safety problems.
And so when I talk about public safety, I talk about it in a holistic way that includes police, yes, but it also includes positive reforms to the department. It also includes prevention. It also includes mental health.
Back at the Blue Kangaroo, Carla Fiera is looking for stabilization in her neighborhood. She has worked at the laundromat for 3 years and lives nearby.
I have been seeing too much difference between, you know, other neighborhoods than here in this community. It needs a lot of help.
The business community feels the same. Tim Sheehy heads the Milwaukee Chamber. He says people across the city want the same things: safety, prosperity, and educational opportunities.
And I think that that fundamentally covers every resident in the city of Milwaukee, whether they're here doing business, whether they're playing, whether they're living here, or whether they're passing through.
Sheehy says the election of a new mayor is exciting because it doesn't happen very often in Milwaukee. In the last 60 years, there have been 4 mayors. No matter how it turns out, it's a chance to look at the city's challenges in a new way. Corrine Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And now let's hear about what shows you suggest we put together in the coming weeks and months. What local developments are important and newsworthy? Do you think fellow Wisconsinites should know about a program in your community that's making a positive difference, that's making headway. Join in now on this caller-only hour. The number is 800-642-1234. Email your show ideas to ideas@wpr.org. In January, we talked with Ashland Mayor Deb Lewis, who was first elected in 2014, and she is the first woman to hold the position. We asked how tourism is going in the pandemic.
Tourism has been great. I think our hotels set a record last summer, but as with everywhere else, finding workers to staff some of the tourism industries has been a challenge. And what we have seen is employers who are finding creative ways, obviously raising wages to attract people, giving more flexible hours, signing bonuses, that sort of thing. But it's a pervasive problem that we have to keep working on. But you're right, because we are such a beautiful place, people want to come up here, and it is a wonderful place to vacation.
Are you finding workers in your business, in your community? What programs are working and why? This is a caller-only hour. What questions do you think we should be asking local leaders or other Wisconsin authorities on workforce, on climate, on housing affordability? We want to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. Now, in December, Beloit City Manager Lori Luther came on our program and discussed efforts to increase officer diversity in the police force. And Lori Luther has been city manager since 2015. She previously worked as city administrator in Waukesha and in Reedsburg.
We've been very fortunate. While all communities, I think, are seeking to hire police officers these days, we've had large recruitment pools and really great candidates. So far, that has been looking great. And, you know, it is a constant work in progress. You can never check a box and say that you've achieved, because facing and fighting racism is a daily battle. But I think that we have made meaningful progress. And, you know, given the fact that we had implemented all of the 21st century policing policy recommendations years ago, I think put us in an excellent position.
It's Beloit City Manager Lori Luther there, as we've talked with more than a dozen mayors in recent months. And now we want to hit pause and hear from you on how your community is addressing these issues, like policing and like safety in the community. What programs work? What is worthy of more discussion? Join in with your segment ideas at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Now, in November, we talked with Green Bay's Mayor Eric Genrich about the city setting aside $2.7 million for police body cameras, with the support of a $700,000 donation from the Green Bay Packers. Here's Genrich on the initial use of these body cams.
We have appreciated them to this point. I know the chief really likes the fact that we have them in place. There's something also called replay coaching that's involved, which I know has been welcome, so that, you know, our officers and folks in our command staff can take a look at routine incidents or incidents where we feel like, things could have gone differently, to really provide, you know, that feedback, from our more seasoned officers who have seen some more things, maybe a little bit more experienced, can kind of coach up our new officers and help them improve the way that they're policing in the community. So thus far have really appreciated the fact that we have that technology in place.
That was Green Bay Mayor Eric Genrich. As we open up the lines, find out where you want to take the morning show next pertaining to local issues that may fly under the radar. Let's talk about the programming you want to hear this month and beyond at 800-642-1234. maybe you had a local project that finally got funding in the pandemic. Does your local government have a committee or task force that has made notable breakthroughs on a tough challenge? Who are the people and what are the programs that should be recognized for solving a problem? What challenges do you want us to explore from a statewide or a multi-state perspective? Be part of this caller-only hour, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute, maybe hear from you on the Ideas Network. Hi, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Here on The Morning Show, we have talked with more than a dozen mayors around Wisconsin in recent months, trying to get a better sense of pressing issues on the ground on a local level. And now it's time to add your voice on where we go to develop future segments that dig into local government and community issues. So when it comes to complex issues like housing and climate change, policing, the pandemic, what haven't we explored together? Where are we missing a piece? Is there something happening for the good in your community that could make a positive impact on people all over Wisconsin? Are you part of an initiative that has made recent strides and it's time to talk about it? Share your ideas right now, 800-642-1234. Email your show ideas and topics you want to know more about. Email ideas@WPR.org. Let's bring in Jane now in Manitowoc. Hi, Jane. What is your idea?
Hello. With Memorial Day coming up and the VA saying that over 65,000 veterans died in 2020, I'd like to see WPR do a show regarding the widow's benefits. Half of those ladies and or men are entitled to some financial benefits, whether it's just a funeral stipend or a headstone or actually the war veterans pension. So I'd like to see that show out there. Only 500,000 widows receive benefits at all, and yet there's over 8 million of them, many living below poverty. Thank you.
Yes, Jane, thank you. And certainly bringing this to the attention that, you know, oftentimes we talk about veterans themselves, but we haven't looked specifically at what benefits are out there for their spouses and for their loved ones left behind. So thank you so much, Jane, for bringing that to our attention. And as we seek out ideas from you on the heels of talking with so many community leaders in recent months, what segment or show should we bring to the attention of all of Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. Wanda Montgomery has served on the Brown Deer Village Board since 2018 and has been village president since 2019. We had such a wide-ranging conversation, really enlightening conversation. I remember it well. And we touched on some of the community's public transportation challenges.
It could be challenging for people that are coming to work in Brown Deer from Milwaukee or other communities because the buses may not go past, and they don't. They don't go past, say, north of 60th on 51st or on 60th. And there are a number of small manufacturing businesses. And so what people end up doing is taking the bus as far as they can and then walking a block or two to get to their work sites. So I know that there's some discussion now about adding more routes, but I don't know that those routes will go, again, past Brown Deer Road because most of that area is residential.
So that is Brown Deer Village Board President Wanda Montgomery, who, by the way, we learned reaches out personally and greets every new Brown Deer resident by, you know, dropping off a little bit of information at their door. How has your city taken on transportation challenges? What are the transportation issues that are seemingly have started to become addressed, especially in the pandemic? pandemic. What is lacking as people get around and try to get to work or get to a medical clinic? 800-642-1234 to join in with your segment ideas as we have talked with so many local leaders. And now we want to pause here and find out what is missing. Maybe it's a program in your community, a task force, a community group that's making strides that should really get a bigger spotlight. Join in, give us some show ideas and what we should know. What should the morning show cover next on local issues and government that hit home that resonate across Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. Todd Novak, who has been Dodgeville's mayor since 2012. He also represents the city and its surrounding counties of Iowa and Lafayette in the state assembly, a dual role he's held since 2015. So Dodgeville is home to Lands' End, the clothing company. And in our December conversation, we talked about what it's like for the local economy to be dominated by one large employer.
We've had our ups and downs. Lands' End is about 15% of Dodgeville's tax base. You know, we had the founder of Lands' End, Gary Comer. The city of Dodgeville and Gary Comer had a very unique relationship, and he was very good to the community. For example, he built the city swimming pool, the Gary Comer Pool, gave tens of thousands of dollars a year back to the community through the United Way or various different organizations. When Lands' End got sold years ago, that relationship kind of changed, and Lands' End went from a more hometown type business to a corporate business. So Dodgeville and Lands' End had a few years of rocky relationships. However, that has been repaired, and they have a new CEO, Jerome Griffiths, and him and I actually become really good friends. We talk to each other usually every quarter, every couple of months, just keep each other updated. I think that, you know, we understand how important they are to Dodgeville, and he understands how important Dodgeville and the surrounding areas to him as far as workforce.
So that was Dodgeville's Mayor Todd Novak describing the relationship that he has with Lands' End and having one large dominant employer in your community. Can you relate? And what type of conversation should we have about workforce that we haven't had? Join in as we revisit some key moments during our conversations with mayors and municipal leaders in recent months. When it comes to local issues that matter to you, what should the morning show cover next? This is a caller-only hour. We're gathering up all your show ideas and the topics you think are really ripe for discussion now. 800-642-1234. We talked with, we heard from Mary in Phillips, called in and couldn't stay with us. And Mary wants to hear about denial of Medicare. What are the requirements and why are people denied? So more of a fuller conversation on Medicare. Mary, thank you so much for that show idea. And now let's hear yours. What kitchen table conversations are you having that should have a wider audience? What issues do you want to discuss with your neighbors at our virtual kitchen table here at the morning show? Be part of this caller only hour, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Justin Nichols was first elected mayor of Manitowoc in 2009 at the age of 22. He was the youngest mayor ever elected in the city, previously elected to the city's common council in 2005 when he was 18, still in high school. So in January, we talked about the city's growing industrial park and an expanding manufacturer there of ammunition supplies called Ammo Inc.
Yeah, Ammo Inc., they are on track. So they're building as we speak, and they are a company that is continually growing. They're continually doing more acquisitions. And those good paying jobs, there's signs all around town that say ammo, we're starting at $25 an hour, which for Manitowoc, after Manitowoc Company and Muro left, we saw those wages go down pretty drastically. They were the two companies that paid in the 20s and into the 30s. Now we're starting to see all these other smaller companies with 100 plus jobs competing for some of the labor force and raising their wages to considerable amounts. So it's a good problem to have, I would say, than the alternative. But, you know, bodies and people are still what we need. And that's why our community is focusing very heavily on quality of life. That's why we're focusing on downtown. That's why we're focusing on the things that make Manitowoc unique.
That there is Justin Nichols, elected mayor of Manitowoc in 2009, working to make Manitowoc a better place. And this is a caller-only hour as we spend time brainstorming on local issues that deserve more attention, more conversation. This is a good time to look around your community for the aha moments. What ideas are worth sharing, that are worth airing? What conversations matter to you most? What lifts you up? What do you think should be getting more attention in these times that we're not paying attention to? What community program has made such a difference to you or your loved ones? Join in now, 800-642-1234. Stay with us on this caller-only hour with your ideas front and center. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. There, it's Kate Archer Kent, and this time on the morning show is dedicated to you and what you want to bring to the conversation in future weeks and months. Inspired by our conversations with more than a dozen mayors, hopefully you've caught them, and local community leaders about pressing local issues, we said, you know what? You know your own community best. You know what needs time and attention. So what are your ideas for future programs and segments? What's on your mind on local issues? Which shows have you enjoyed most? Which experts should we have back and why? Join in with your conversation ideas, especially at the local level. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Laura from Keeler is here. Laura, hi, what's on your mind?
Good morning. So listening just to this short section, it reminded me of an issue that is happening right now, that we're planning to resurface some of our county highway.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 10 miles between two small burbs. And we live on this section of the road, about half a mile, and there are people that continually, all hours of the day, walk, run, bike. And we went to a meeting to talk to them about the issues with it, and I suggested they put in some sort of extra wide road with a bike path or something to keep people safe. And they're like, nope, that's not, we don't have money for that. It's too expensive for half a mile of a pathway costing so much. And so it's just kind of, it makes me sad that they're looking at improvements, but they just do little things at a time. They don't look at bigger pictures. And I understand that there's a lot of financial considerations to it. But if you're already ripping up the road and there's a safety concern and I'm a first responder on top of it and I see these people walk by our house all the time, it just seems like there's got to be a way to help small communities get that funding so they can look at bigger pictures, because we have a subdivision across, you know, within eyesight of us, and they've put up 32 new homes in 3 years.
And that subdivision needs sidewalks. They need to get out of that subdivision in order to recreate, in order to get from point A to point B, if they would like to be pedestrians and you would like your community to be a little bit more walkable and interconnected, is what I'm hearing, Laura.
Yeah, because we're only 5 miles from Dubuque, Iowa, and 10 miles from Platteville, Wisconsin. I mean, you want a small rural community quality of life, but there's just all these financial considerations, and then when they get the money, they can only do X. But even, like, you know, we live on the wrong side of the highway, that they didn't extend the fiber to us because they couldn't cross the county highway. And now that they're going to dig it up, I said, why not put that in too? And they're like, oh, we never thought of it.
Did I hear, Laura, you say that you're a first responder?
Yeah, that's another issue that we should be talking about, too. Lack of volunteers in these small communities that need, that are called any time of the day and night for volunteers to come and help. And we want to help. It's just they're getting harder and harder to shift or to fulfill the needs of a community with volunteers.
Mm. How long have you been a first responder?
I think I'm on my going into my third year.
Mm-hmm. Why did you become one?
Because I love my community and I want to be able to help when I can. And I've been told I have the skills necessary to help in the situation. And so I, you know, went through the training, but it's getting harder and harder to advance to be able to be a volunteer when you don't get any pay for it. Mm. And they've increased the hours, you know, 100 hours of training for some levels of being a first responder and don't have time for all of that. So there's a whole huge issue to talk about with local volunteer firemen, which my husband is, and first responders.
You bring up such important, such complicated two issues, Laura. I really appreciate you calling in, and thank you for shedding light on both the walkability and pedestrian aspect when roads are torn up, but also the issue around volunteer first responders. Appreciate so much the call, and appreciate your work in your rural, in your community. Let's go to Yordis now in Colfax. Hi, Yordis, go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling about an unsolved crime in the area. There were a large number of cats shot last spring in Dunville Bottoms, I believe, near Menominee. It's a rural area. And there's a $10,000 reward for information to solve this. There, I thought maybe you could talk to the Dunn County Humane Society about this because 36 cats, I believe, survived this massacre, and they just worked tirelessly to help these traumatized cats to get homes and to heal. But there were a lot that were deceased at the site, and it was a horrific event. And also, I suggest that maybe you could call the Menominee Police to get the information out, because I think if the whole state of Wisconsin heard about this horrific event, there may be someone that would have information that's outside of this region, because they have gotten tips and looked into things for a really long time, and it is still unsolved. So it's very likely that these cats were brought from outside of the area. And I'm a volunteer at the shelter, so I'm familiar with the cats, and many of them were orange cats. They were orange cats, and there were a lot of variations, too, within that. But they could give information on all the details that might trigger a memory of someone that had a lot of cats and then suddenly didn't.
Yordis, I just want to ask you, because you are a volunteer at your local shelter, what are some of the issues that you see local animal care and local humane societies affected by that we should be talking about?
Well, I think that it has been more interest since COVID in adopting from shelters.
Yes.
And I think that people should really continue to look at supporting the shelters, both financially and volunteering, because the volunteers can give the socialization that the animals need to, you know, continue to stay healthy emotionally while they're getting ready for a home. But there are way too many cases of abuse of animals and that are shocking. And I think that the people that do this for a living are very poorly paid. It's like a calling, you know, to do this kind of work. And I think that people should really treasure the people that work at nonprofits.
Mm. Yordis, thank you so much for bringing this to our attention and also the work of what it is like at a local animal shelter, especially in a small community. Join in. What comes to mind as you look at local issues around you that you are involved in? What should the morning show cover next? This is a caller-only hour, 800-642-1234. Driving home local issues, issues that matter to you. Mark now in Chippewa Falls. Mark, hi, go ahead.
Good morning. I'm calling about global warming and what we can do about it. Our country and the world is increasingly struggling with global warming, and if it doesn't act quickly to reduce the output of carbon dioxide and methane, the irreversible events make it impossible to prevent further global warming, such as melting the permafrost. As a leader of the free world, it's absolutely necessary that we lead the way in every way possible to prevent the advance of this catastrophic process.
And Mark, specifically in global warming, specifically in the area of climate change, what experts would you like to hear from, or what specific conversation would you like to have?
I'd like to hear about how we can convert the vehicles of the postal system from gas to electric or hybrid.
Okay.
Right now, they're planning on making 90% of the new fleet gas-powered. And the new vehicles will get 10 miles per gallon. And we really need, if we can put a man on the moon, I would think we ought to be able to convert.
Convert over major fleets. Yes. Yes. Mark, thank you so much for calling in. And of course, climate change and those types of conversations we do have here on the morning show, and continue to look for where we go next on, you know, such a important issue. Mark, thank you for the call. Sarah now in Madison. Sarah, you want to bring up transportation issues?
I do want to bring up transportation issues, and I've lived most of my adult life outside of Madison in Wisconsin, so I'm not calling from a Madison perspective. I'm looking at places to retire. I'd love to live up in Ashland or in Bayfield, and I think having a transportation, I used to live in Marshfield, there's no bus service. You can't get to the grocery store if you no longer drive. And I just feel like our smaller communities need some kind of support so that people who are of retirement age can age in place and I can move there.
I see. And so transportation really a key issue as you look to say, where do I want to retire? I want the beauty of northern Wisconsin, but I don't want the isolation. Is that right, Sarah?
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Yes, thank you so much for that segment idea as we press forward on transportation issues, especially in rural communities. Alvin now in Milwaukee. Alvin, hi.
Good morning, Kate. I'm a person who travels across the state for work, and I'd really like to see hear a program about the disconnect between our urban communities like Milwaukee and some of the rural communities across the state. They often feel that they're at odds with one another, where I think there's actually, you know, a symbiotic relationship. They're both in need of one another. I just think it should be addressed.
Where do you see the disconnect most brightly, if you will? Where do you see it happening?
Well, sometimes when I'm traveling into northern, some of the smaller communities that are under 10,000, they're afraid of the city. They fear the city. They don't understand people who live actually in the city. They don't want to go to the city, and vice versa. There's a lot of animosity sometimes from urban dwellers who consider people in rural communities to be uneducated, to be not cosmopolitan. I don't know. There's a lot of different things, but there's a disconnect there between, you know, people there. And then that often bleeds into other misunderstandings, whether it be political, cultural, socioeconomic. And I think that there's probably some good experts out there who study this and mm-hmm. could help us bridge that divide.
I hear what you're saying, Alvin, and I hear how also how improving conversation between, you know, those two groups, if you will, could also maybe open up some minds. May I ask you what you travel across the state for?
I am the territory manager for a U.S. manufacturer of window coverings.
Uh-huh.
They create blinds, shades.
I see. And so in your workforce area, have you seen a lot of business in these times? What are the implications of the pandemic?
Home interiors has been booming for the past year and a half, as a lot of people are available as they have been staying home or switching to work from home.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the projects that they've put off, for a number of reasons, they have decided to take them on because they're available to have people come to their homes to make those improvements. They've also, as the dollars are more available, as they're spending less on dining outside the home, outside entertainment and travel, there's finance to that. So a lot of people making home improvements, whether it be, you know, from the floor up.
Well, that makes you more busy. Alvin, thank you so much for calling in, and thanks for listening and donating your idea for future shows. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You can join in as we collect future show ideas from you, honing in on what's happening around you in local issues that deserve more conversation, more exploration. Perhaps you are happy with how a project was handled in your community. Have you encountered a spirit of cooperation at the local level that you haven't seen before? Where do you see solutions? Where do you see trust that other communities could replicate? What discussions deserve more time and attention? Still time to talk on this caller-only hour, 800-642-1234. Add your voice. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're back with more conversation about the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It has been such a pleasure to talk with mayors and municipal leaders from all over Wisconsin in recent months. And we've heard new voices, new perspectives, and we now want to hear yours about where we should take these conversations at the local level next. Let's go to Ashley in Ashland. Hi, Ashley. Go ahead.
Hi. We do have a very good thought.
Oh, Ashley, you're breaking up, but I think that you wanted to make mention of a train service, perhaps, between Wisconsin and, Wisconsin and other areas, inner city passenger rail. Is that right?
Exactly.
Okay, so having more of a conversation about inner city passenger rail service and, you know, certainly Amtrak passenger rail, what we can do to connect our communities, and Wisconsin being served by two Amtrak routes right now, Hiawatha service, which is a corridor there between Chicago and Milwaukee. There's also another corridor to the Twin Cities. So talking more about train service, Ashley, thank you so much for calling in. Sorry about that connection. Tina now in Green Bay. Tina, hi, go ahead.
Hi. I would like to have a conversation about the actual cost of insurance, of health insurance, kind of comparing that to what the single payer system would be. You know, every time we have a new election, they talk about single payer. Nothing really gets done. It just kind of stays the same. But we're actually seeing, like, what it really costs an individual every year for their deductibles and their out-of-pocket and, you know, having different things like that. And then how much longer people work because they have to stay in jobs because they need their insurance. You know, what is the real cost to Americans, or even, you know, looking at Wisconsin, by having the type of insurance system we have right now for health insurance?
It sounds like too a think tank or you know, like a research institute that really has looked very closely at the cost of health insurance and this issue might be a good candidate for a conversation starter.
Yes, absolutely. That would be great.
Well, Tina, thank you so much for calling in with that idea. Appreciate it. Alan now in Two Rivers is here. Alan, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I got an interesting topic I'd like to see your show do someday in the future. The topic is ringing of the ears. Hmm. I happen to be a victim of that. And since becoming one, I have run into so many people that have this problem and are just living under excruciating situations. Mine is on the less tonal side, so it's a little more easier to withstand. But there's people out there that are suffering greatly with this.
Wow.
And the thing that makes me sick is I get on the internet and I see all these offers that coax you into listening to their video or whatever, and you spend hours trying to find a solution for this, and you buy the product and it doesn't work. And it's like, I would like to see somebody that really did the studying on this to kind of steer us in the right direction to find help for something like this.
You know, we have done so many health conversations. Alan, I don't think we've ever really talked about this before. For you, was it adult onset? Onset, or have you been dealing with ringing in your ears for life?
Actually, what happened with me is I had a dental implant.
Oh.
I actually had several dental implants done in the fall of 2020. And then shortly after the restorative work was done in the spring of 2021, I started having ringing in both of my ears. And I did some research on that particular connection, because it seemed coincidental. And indeed, there is some things in the dentist office that can be done incorrectly, such as keeping people's mouths open for a long period of time. It can change the pressure that the jaw puts on the nerve cord that goes up to your cochlear ear, part of your ear.
Sure.
And
yes.
Also, another thing that can create it is when they do root canals or implants.
So certainly yes. So, you know, certainly looking at the connections there to ears, nose, and throat. Alan, thank you so much. Perhaps we can get an ENT on. Jason now in Bloomer. Jason, hi, go ahead.
Hey, okay, so my idea involves family, home finance, and how it's changed over the last 50-odd years. You know, back in the day, the interest rates for savings and CDs were double digits.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're having tenths of digits. Housing was a meager percentage, not a major percentage of the family budget. My question is, how can we get ahead? Is there any other tips? Because obviously doing what our parents did was not... it is not really a thing. So how can we as a generation now get ahead like our parents did?
Oh, Jason, this is such an important conversation to have. And, you know, digging into home finance and to just whether you can have the American dream, whether you can even afford a home is something that we continue to have to talk about with these housing costs. So thank you so much, Jason, for calling in. And we will do our best to look into all of these segment ideas. With your ideas, keep bringing them on, 800-642-1234. We appreciate them. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.